Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast, episode 130. Oh my god, we're getting closer to 200. The bicentennial of the AIPT Comics Podcast. My name is David Brook. I am your host with the most. Also with me, Nathan Simmons, also a host.
Yeah.
Maybe the most? I don't know.
I've got some. It's interesting to me that now you're getting hype for the bicentennial. Like, 70, like over a year's worth of episodes away.
Yes, but we are on the 4th of July episode. See, this is where my head's at.
Okay.
I just read Captain America Bicentennial Battles last night.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to say that influenced this intro, but...
Is that the collection that has the has him fighting Benjamin Franklin?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you've been blowing up the AIPT Discord with a lot of Franklin slander.
You know, the dude's got to stop stealing stuff.
No, he's okay. Got to. Stealing lightning, stealing America's look.
Was he the one who ripped off Tesla?
No, that was Thomas Edison. Like, let's move forward like 200 years.
I feel like we should blame Ben and Franklin for that. And also, Tesla, in my mind, is always David Bowie. It's just that's how it works.
Did you say Benna Franklin? Like Bennifer, but...
If J-Lo and Ben Affleck got together and went back in time, yes, that is correct.
And they became Ben Franklin. Interesting. Okay.
So, later on the show,
we
have special guest Jeff Parker joining us.
Yeah.
To talk about Ninjak, which comes out July 14th from Valiant Comics. The basically like the reboot of the series, and there hasn't been one for quite some time.
Yeah, you know, it's a really fun first issue, and I'm looking forward to having a chat with him about it.
But if you don't know, this is the comic book podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week, talk about the best comics of the week.
The best.
We have silly, funny segments, and we talk about the week ahead.
We get a little wacky.
We get silly. We get fun.
Yeah. We're a couple of scamps.
We always start with the news. That's in part because, you know, we got to talk about the most important stuff in the world.
Mm-hmm.
As a weekly news program. In the top news of the week, Marvel has revealed more details about Amazing Spider-Man's new approach, new era. They're calling it Beyond.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. The marketing is like the Amazing Spider-Man, and then a whole other logo says Beyond. So it's not like, you know, colon Beyond. But
right. So this isn't about Terry McGinnis becoming Spider-Man.
No, this is not.
Okay.
If you don't know, this was actually announced last week, but more art and details came out this week about it.
Mm-hmm.
Last week they revealed it's a thrice monthly release schedule with writers Zeb Wells, Kelly Thompson, Saladin Ahmed, Cody Ziegler, and Patrick Gleason all writing, along with artists. This week we learned that Gleason's drawing, of course, but he's joined by Sarah Pacelli, Michael Dowling, and Arthur Adams.
Yeah.
Not sure on Arthur Adams being just a cover artist or not, but... That's a new information.
Yeah, these covers that have come out, boy, they sure want us to think that Peter Parker's gonna die, huh?
They do. There's a very tragic cover. I think this one's by Arthur Adams actually, and it's like
the art out where he's on the IV drip.
Yeah, and Mary Jane's holding his arm. It doesn't look good for him, and
sure
we're
doesn't.
Way up in this above him, almost like we're in heaven, waiting for him to come up to us.
Right, and there's another one where she's like kissing him while he's beaten and battered, and
which actually looks like it could be art that was supposed to be in the J.J. Abrams trying.
Sure. I do love. I gotta say again, like every time we get a new glimpse at the Ben Reilly suit, the slightly more streamlined version of his '90s costume, I love it so much.
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely interesting how it's off center as well,
mm-hmm.
which is probably trying to tell us something about the character, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he's like a little wacky. Maybe he's a podcaster in this version.
So if you look at the solicit, they didn't actually say this, but if you look at the solicit, it says. There is, it's written by, and then there's a main writer, and Zeb Wells is writing the first two issues of the new approach. But then there's a Beyond board.
Mm-hmm.
It just says Beyond board. I'm assuming this is a backup, and this is a shared collaboration between Thompson and all the other writers.
Cool.
So, and then we see on the third issue, Thompson writes the main book, but there's still this Beyond board thing. So if you look at the art, it looks like... Beyond might be like a science org that Peter or whoever the Spider-Man is managing or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is it's the same Beyond Corporation, right, that we've seen Marvel before, I think.
But it's maybe the same
new take
logo.
On it. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, yeah, which would be like an alternate dimension thing.
Yeah.
People have also commented that this doesn't necessarily look like it might be Ben Reilly's version of Spider-Man. I don't know. Could be like another version, like an alternate version. I don't know.
I don't know. He sure looks blonde and handsome to me. So I don't.
we will keep you updated on any more news on this. I'm sure Marvel will be teasing the hell out of this as they lead up to the August 14th Free Comic Book Day story.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously be covering that as well. In other news, Image Comics finally announces Primordial, a new series coming out September 15th by none other than Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino, the very same creators behind Gideon Falls.
Yeah.
But this time, no worries, it's a 6-issue miniseries, so we're going to get it all done in one kind of story arc right there. Bam.
Do we talk about a new Jeff Lemire book every week?
Oh my God, you're right. Wasn't the Maze one last week?
It really feels like it. Well, yeah, there was one announced last week, and then I think also, like, he had just started teasing Primordial as well.
Yeah, they were releasing, like, just a little bit of art or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the guy's very busy. He's, like, Bendis level.
Yeah, just, like, never slows down. And consistently good.
This series is a mix of sci-fi and Cold War thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, all the animals that NASA or the United States or whoever, the whole world, sent into space, something happened. When they come back, we don't know what will happen, but
yeah,
it probably won't be good.
This sounds rad. I'm already on board.
Yeah, the art. There's a short preview on aptcomics.com, and the art looks great. Again, you could tell Andrea is just going for broke with the layout design and crazy ideas and visuals.
Dave Stewart's colors like make these like cosmic scenes look so good.
They do, yeah. Also in the news,
mm-hmm.
so it's a little late for this, but the Literary Tarot was a Kickstarter that I think we reported on a few weeks ago when it started. Well, it's over now, but in the last throes, I'm talking last 45 hours where you could back it, they added some crazy talent, including Scott Snyder, Holly Black, Terry Brooks, Stephen Fry, a whole bunch of other people who will be writing one of the cards. If you don't know what this is, it's a tarot deck where they've paired an amazing, talented writer with one of six artists that were pre-selected and set up to draw these. And they were given a specific tarot card, and then they had to mix the tarot card idea with a literary element, say a book or a movie or not a movie. That doesn't work. Literary book. No, but I think G. Willow Wilson did one. It was like Vanity Fair, which is a book, of course. So yeah, so it was kind of interesting that they got all these extra people at the last second. And the project was supposed to be funded at $80,000 and it reached 700 something thousand.
Wow.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's wild. Yeah.
So that was kind of neat to see this continued like effort to get more creators. Almost every creator you've probably ever heard of is probably
these look so project. Cool. Greg Rucka's Huck Finn, like Brian Bendis doing War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
This is so cool. Yeah, they've added Chris Roberson and man, this is a great lineup. This is so cool.
I managed to get a deck, but you know, a lot of the cases with this kind of thing, you could probably get a deck later that'll sell like an extra batch if you've missed out, but they haven't yet.
Well, especially since it's, you know, exceeded its goal by what, 900%?
Yeah, something like that.
That's wild. Good for them.
In other new series news, Marvel announced Phoenix Song Echo, a new miniseries. I think it's a miniseries. This is focusing in on Echo, aka the Phoenix, the new Phoenix, that was introduced during Jason Aaron's run two arcs ago. This will be written by Rebecca Roanhorse, who also did one of the stories in Marvel's Voices and the Digitus Voices, along with artist Luke Maresca. So this will be coming in October.
Nice.
I know a lot of like X-Men fans are kind of angry about this because Echo's not a mutant, and they feel that the Phoenix Force is Jean Grey's.
It's a twist I didn't see coming, for sure.
Do you remember when Bendis did a Phoenix story, but it was like the Iron Fist had the Phoenix?
Oh, yeah. When was that? I have a vague memory.
Early 2000s, yeah. I think. Speaking of X-Men, an X-Men lived, an X-Men died this week. So this is spoilers for Cable and X-Factor. This week, Cable, that's right, old man Cable, returned back to life. And in X-Factor, a certain witch that's red was killed.
Right.
So this was making the news in part because Scarlet Witch's death is a big part of the Trial of Magneto, the new miniseries coming out later this year, because it all centers around her death and who killed her. And then in cable, this is particularly interesting news because for the longest time, people were wondering, when is Kid Cable going to die? When is old Cable going to take back over? There's only one more issue of Cable.
Right.
I wonder what will happen. They're facing off against Strife, that jerk. Also a version of Cable.
You know what? There's too many Summers boys out there. We gotta start pruning them.
I mean, we got Vulcan, we got Scott, we got Starjammers guy.
Right. Corsair.
There you go. In other news, Comic-Con came out with some figures that look real good if you're in the comic book business. I suppose it probably matters if you're like the president of Marvel versus a comic shop owner, but they came out with some year-to-year sales mm-hmm. figures, and in 2020, even with the pandemic, mm-hmm. $1.28 billion in comic sales compared to the year before, $1.21. So it's going up ever so slightly, but
about 6%,
if you look at their...
Yeah.
You look at their graphs, it's a pretty consistent increase mm-hmm. over since 2012.
Yeah, this really surprised me.
Every time these sales numbers come out, I'm like, wait, what? I thought everything was dying.
Right. Like exactly. I think we've talked about this on the show before, like every couple of years, or at least like every 6 months, there's a thing that takes Twitter by storm where someone says like the comics yeah. industry is dying, and it's just never really the case.
Will Marvel buy DC?
Right. And I think it's just more of the comics industry isn't dying. It's just continually adapting to difficult times. The fact that so many shops were closed,
yeah,
but sales went up is insane. I mean, I don't know if that means that people are picking stuff up as soon as they're back open. I mean, I know that one of the things I said is there was an explosion in aftermarket activity. So like instead of people saving all their money and going to cons, they were actually going into shops and picking up books on day one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really interesting to see how this kind of pivoted.
At you know a big chunk of that was book channels, so it wasn't comic shops, but possibly Amazon and bookstores, but probably more Amazon uh-huh. than anything, with $645
million. Wow.
Comic stores took in $440 million, but still, that's a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got digitally downloaded at $160 million, and then other channels, which I assume people were like snorting comics or drinking them.
Right, right.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think Bad Idea's last book is going to be injectable.
That'd be amazing. They actually would have like an incredible market for that, I think, since no one's doing it.
Right.
Also, $835 million of that was graphic novels, but that kind of lines up with the whole book channels thing.
Oh, sure.
Again, though, digital comics still smaller than I would have anticipated mm-hmm. at $160 million.
It is just, it's cool. It's cool to see how like many options there are for people now. I mean, when, you know, I know I've talked about this before, but like after Hurricane Michael, I didn't have a comic shop near me for months because everybody was mm-hmm. rebuilding. And so it was really nice to be able to, you know, pivot over to digital, you know, for a while. And, right. you know, as soon as I could, I was, you know, picking up the singles that I missed. But, yeah, it's especially in this last year when people were, you know, trying to be careful. It's mm-hmm. good to see that people were still able to, you know, buy their favorite books.
I mean, I remember, I think last year we had an interview with actually comic shop owner from, what was it? Shoot, I'm forgetting my comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, Kamikaze.
Mm. Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
And like they were trying to open, but it was so hard to. But a lot of stores were doing like curbside pickup, and
right.
they kept going. They kept going. Like it didn't just stop mm-hmm. for them. I think people needed that release too.
Absolutely.
So this is more good news for the comic industry. Moving on to our next segment. Heroes don't do that, do they, though? This is the worst title for a segment.
I like it.
Last week, Dave. It was Nathan's turn to mm-hmm. ask the question, but this week Dave gets to ask.
Okay.
Nathan, do heroes mm-hmm. put ketchup on their hot dogs?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, where the hero's from. right? Like, if we're talking Spider-Man, he's not putting ketchup on his hot dog. He's putting some sauerkraut and some mustard on that, baby. I don't know why that's just my stereotypical, hey, baby, I'm Spider-Man. What's going on?
Now do Chicago. Do Chicago. Who's the hero in Chicago? Is there Invincible?
I, you know what? I think if you're trying to, like, make yourself tough, you're not putting ketchup on your hot dogs. You're putting, you know, Dijon mustard, something that'll burn your mouth. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm just saying that I'm weak. I don't know. I feel like
can't handle mustard. It's too spicy.
I feel like I'm trying to, like, justify this, and it's instead turning into, like, one of those, like, hot masculinity takes that you see on Twitter.
Oh, got
I think it just boils down to the fact that I don't personally like ketchup on my hot dogs, so okay, I would like to imagine that my heroes don't either.
If you don't know, or if you're not from America, there's, like, this golden rule that you're not supposed to put ketchup on. It's only mustard on hot dogs for some reason.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the city, though. You're right. I think in most cities, though, it's common to do mustard only.
Batman and Alfred are putting, like, Grey Poupon on theirs. Fancy boys.
So fancy.
They are. They're the fanciest.
What hero would put ketchup, though? Did you have any ideas?
Oh, okay. Since you're springing it on me.
I think Plastic Man, maybe.
Plastic Man, yeah. I'm trying to think of who would put ketchup on. Ambush Bug, probably. Because that guy's just out of his mind.
Anyone who likes sweets.
Yeah.
I put ketchup on my hot dog, but I'm also a serial killer, so.
Right, and we know that about you.
Oh, Victor Zsasz, of course, ketchup on his hot dog.
Oh, he loves it.
All right, I think we've definitely answered that question.
Bartman.
Oh, Bartman.
Yeah. Bartman, he likes extra ketchup on his hamburgers, so I'm assuming Bart Simpson does. And that's,
If
you don't know, that's the secret identity of Bartman.
Dude, he just ruined it for everybody.
I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, spoilers. God. Well, we are definitely going to talk spoilers in our next segment, which is our top books of the week.
Yeah.
Our top two favorite comics out this week only. You got to get it now. Never sold again.
Yeah.
Unless you get a graphic novel. Nathan, what was your second favorite comic of the week?
Oh, my second favorite comic of the week was Barbaric Number 1 by Michael Moreci and Nathan Gooden. We talked about this a little bit last week, but it's this nihilistic, hyper-violent, hilarious take on a Conan the Barbarian type following a guy named Owen and his axe that drinks blood. It's really funny. The book sets up this, you know, this huge world. There's a ton of really fantastic world building throughout. And it also just, it takes opportunities to sort of play with the tropes of these kinds of stories. So there's this guy who, you know, has been fighting for years. He's just killed. There's a sequence where he's just literally saying, you know, my whole life, all I've done is fight, feast, and fuck. and he's just kind of like over it. The first thing you see of him in the book is there's this grand monologue where they're pitting him up against all of these warriors, and he just kind of steps out into the, you know, the arena and just goes, well, shit. Like, he doesn't want any part of it. And it's just it's a really interesting take to see on this kind of character, because you usually see these, like, these kinds of characters have, like, a real lust for life, and it's odd to see someone who's maybe clinically depressed as the lead of a, you know, barbarian sword and sorcery type book.
Yeah, that's a good take.
And
oh my God, the book is so epic, right?
It's really great. It looks gorgeous, even when it's gross. And the final page is just, like, genuinely epic. Like, it looks like, if you saw that on a movie, you know, a movie screen or something like that, you're like, oh, well, that's where the title card pops up. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
sure.
It's such a cool image that I just really, it really sets the tone for where the book's going to go. And I'm really looking forward to reading issue two soon.
Yeah, the violence is just so good. If you like Conan the Barbarian, you're of course going to like this.
Yeah, but I think so. I think if you like Conan the Barbarian and you have, like, a sense of humor about those kinds of stories, like, it has a very It reminded me in some spots of like Jindy Tartakovsky's stuff, like Primal or Samurai Jack. Like it has that very earnest but also winking kind of vibe to it. I really, really liked this first issue.
Do you? Here's a good question for you. You know, now that Conan's at Marvel, I think they have to tamp down the violence a little bit. They can't go full tilt.
Right.
Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I mean, it still gets pretty intense sometimes.
And then you've got, you know, when he was at, when Conan was at Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Again, did it get as gory as Barbaric does?
I don't think so. I think there were moments where Dark Horse, they could push things in terms of, like, what is implied. Like, some of those stories got really dark. and weird. I think Barbaric kind of still ratchets things up to the next level.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, because it's at Vault, they can probably push it even harder. Not that it's, like, gross, like you said. It's the gore is still, like, entertaining.
Right.
But then also, like, nudity. Like, I'm trying to think, like, obviously Marvel would never have nudity.
Dark Horse was implied a lot of the time. Like, there would be stuff where there were like a lot of issues where, like, Conan would be fighting fully nude and he'd just be like holding his sword in front of his groin.
Right.
You know, Austin Powers style.
Right. Oh my God. I want a Conan the Barbarian scene, but like the Austin Powers scene where he's covering his genitals.
Absolutely.
No, good pick. It would have been my pick, but I liked another Viking style book.
Yeah, for sure.
A little bit more. Beta Ray Bill number 4 by Daniel Warren Johnson with colors by Mike Spicer.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting series because I think it mixes sci-fi with deeply emotional trauma.
Yeah.
In a way that, and also the title character, like I said, is like this Viking. Obviously, he's from Asgard, or he's an Asgardian style looking hero.
Mm-hmm.
And this book in particular is intriguing because, again, mixing sci-fi with like deep emotion. He is inside in his ship, but it's been swallowed by an alien that is like infecting the ship and making him see his darkest nightmares so that he won't go in the right direction in order to stop this alien from taking over. So like he's seeing, the book actually opens in like a complete dark space of just him standing, and he sees a mirror, he walks up to it and sees himself, his face. He goes from his humanoid form to the horse form, cyborg horse form. And it's just like, this is the trauma he's dealing with. He doesn't want to be in this form anymore, especially after so many years of being able to switch whenever he felt like it.
Right. I love that like so much of this issue was him kind of walking back through all of his worst memories and finding strength in them instead of giving up.
Right, and like by the end, I don't know if he's there yet, but you can see there's like breadcrumbs to have, because this is the penultimate issue, so in the next issue, he's going to have to come to some resolution, and I think there are breadcrumbs for him to find it, but it doesn't go all the way yet before he has to face a very foreboding foe.
Yeah.
Obviously, the art is a mega draw to this book. Yeah. Daniel Warren Johnson's one of the best in the biz right now, I think. He's got this indie detailed vibe.
Oh, it's,
but it works so well.
Again, it has that 2000 AD or like heavy metal vibe where it's just cramming so many huge, weird ideas and designs into every... The Gothic towers toward the end of this issue, like when he's on that like hellscape, are just gorgeous. It's so... Every page of this book looks like it's like on the cover of a death metal album.
There's definitely an advantage for the writer and artist to be the same person, I think, because there's multiple full-page, double-page spreads, and while other books do it great, they look good, I feel like they're more impactful in this book because he's also writing it and knows where to hit those beats. I don't know. The visuals are just insane at times in this book.
For sure.
In ways that like I've never really even seen, or maybe I have, but they've been elevated because of the technology and of course Johnson being a unique artist in himself.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the coolest looking, Beta Ray Bill stories for sure. And I say that as someone who loves this character.
Oh my God, are we gonna get him in Thor 3? Wait, Thor 4?
Yeah, I hope so. I like genuinely like, why haven't we yet? I really thought he was gonna be in Ragnarok. I was so bummed when he wasn't.
I know, me too. I was expecting at least like maybe an end credit scene with him.
Right.
What was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week was Spectre Inspectors number 5 by Bowen McCurdy and Caitlin Musto. This whole mini series I've just adored. In this one in particular, I mean, it's the final issue of the series. I'm hoping that we'll get a continuation in the future. But if we don't, I'm so happy with where this leaves everybody. It ties up the plot line, also gives some great payoffs for like the emotional arc of the characters. It's interesting because there's so many ways in which this story could have played out differently. Like, they're facing down a cult at the end of this miniseries, and I feel like any other story would have had a lot of these characters just be kind of like faceless enemies, and instead there's like a real humanity to them when they find out that they're being played as well. And then it gets into some crazy horror imagery that's like even a surprise even for this series, which is like dipped its toe in that like time and again, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I reviewed it for the site this week, and I think that it has this really, sorry, I'm like rambling. Let's see, what did I put? This really emotionally affected me because it has like this really great message about finding your family and accepting yourself and moving forward with your life or afterlife in this case. And it's it's just a beautiful story told really well, really funny banter occasionally, but I've really grown to love these characters in just a few short issues, and I hope it's not the last we see of them.
Go buy it, folks.
Yeah,
we'll get more of it, probably,
hopefully.
No, good pick. Yeah, no, yeah, it's such a unique, again, we keep picking like really unique takes. It's like, there are great books. There's so many good books. It's hard to pick sometimes.
For sure.
I mean, you and I have even talked, like, there are times where we have to like drop a book and pick another one up just because, I don't know, it has an edge to it, but too many good books out there, including Teen Titans Academy 2021 yearbook by Tim Sheridan and various artists. This is an anthology book, but it's also made to be like a yearbook.
Right.
Where there are pages in between the stories where, like, you get, like, yearbook-style pages of, like, best at certain things, and there are candid photos pages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It opens, though, with a really good story about Stitch, this newer character that isn't human, and that we kind of get inside their head to sort of, try to understand that. But at the same time, Sheridan is really hammering home like the feeling you have when you're in high school and you feel disconnected from your friends or even yourself, trying to find your own identity, and that's Stitched in a nutshell. Meanwhile, they're also trying to become like class president, which is a fun little side thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like a nice story that has a beginning, middle, and end, and it's enjoyable, but then you get more.
Right.
There's a Beast Boy and Raven story, which has a hilarious twist at the end, where they're like at this romantic, I'm going to totally spoil it. They have this romantic dinner, and they're having like Italian food, and they have a moment, and Sheridan really gets at their different powers and how like that affects just their day-to-day. But by the end of the story, we discover they're actually in the cafeteria, and there's like complete like chaos all around them, but they've like frozen time so that they can experience this like nice dinner. It's kind of a funny idea. I could totally see that in like an X-Men movie or something.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's additional stories. There's also, of course, there's Red X in this book.
Yeah.
And he is awesome. He has like a super ninja. He has like some crazy fight scenes at the very end. And he breaks up a there's a whole like criminal org that's selling children to these terrible parents, and like,
oh gosh,
he's freeing them from them, and he sends one of them to the Teen Titans Academy.
Nice.
There's just like a lot of content. Yeah. Again, but it's different than just a conventional anthology because it does go into the whole yearbook feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for top books of the week. In our next segment.
Oh boy!
Standout.
Who's this character?
I'm trying to do ASMR or whatever.
Okay, do it. Okay, go back. Do it again.
Standout.
Kapow.
Moment of the week. Ooh, that was like faintly erotic.
Faintly.
How dare you? This is our favorite moment of the week. This is a moment where we drop the comic book into a puddle, screaming into the heavens. We were so excited. And then we got really upset because we ruined our comic.
Right, right.
This happened to both of us this week and every week. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my favorite moment of the week was Barbaric. Wait, no, it was Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
So there's a moment, it's a double play spread where Scuttlebutt and Beta Ray Bill are looking on into the vast space where there's like incredible spaceships, similar to Star Wars Star Destroyers, fighting each other. And there's giant flaming fist with a giant, I think it's a sword,
yep,
coming and just smashing through these ships. And this fist is coming off a planet.
Yeah. So
clearly there's like a flaming, you know, baddie up down there, basically thrusting his sword into space and just smashing all these ships. And he's like looking on in a casual sort of pose.
Mm-hmm.
And he's simply saying, "Before the fire came." But most of this page is just the space scene. And it's just so cool and pretty. And the colors are really great. It's just, it's epic on a scale that you don't normally see in comics.
For sure.
But you do see in like big, cool movies.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I mean, if it was just the space battle or just the giant hand or just the, you know, looking over a planet, it would be one thing. But the fact that it's all three, it's just, it's the coolest image for sure.
And like on the foreground too,
yeah.
You can see what they're standing on, like a black spaceship.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just the silhouette of
it. I was very close to picking one of these pages as well.
Yeah, there are multiple in this issue. What was your favorite moment?
My favorite moment is from Spectre and Spectre's number 5, and it is this disgusting monster transformation. They've been arguing with this cult leader, and he finally decides to show them his true form, and his eyes are hollowed out, and you see the back of his shirt start to tear, and he's got skulls sticking out of his skin. And then slowly he forms these giant long limbs, and this insane mouthful of teeth grows to the size of this mansion. And the one shot of our, you know, protagonists, they're just kind of staring like, I can't fucking believe I'm looking at this. It's right. So crazy because this book has been a lot of like gentler horror scenes. You know, glowing eyes or like ghost kids, stuff like that. This is the first time we've seen like a full on demonic body horror type thing like this.
Yeah, it saved the best for last.
They really did. And I remember like turning to this page and just kind of like my head jumped back and just, I couldn't believe that, you know, it was going to this place. Yeah, it's stuck with me all week since I read it.
Nice. Maybe you'll have dreams about it.
Oh, I hope not.
Oh, that's funny. Yes, two really cool moments you can read if you go to the comic shop or buy them on comixology.com.
Yeah.
We get no money from them.
Mm.
Comixology, are you listening? In our next segment, Top Books for next week, we'll talk about our most anticipated comic out next week. That's right, the one we can't wait for. The one we can't die for. Wait, huh? Dave's favorite.
Can't die for it.
So my most anticipated book of the week is X-Men number 1 by Jerry Duggan and Pepe Larraz.
Yeah.
With colors by Marte Gracia. So, again, I'm cheating like I do a lot of weeks. Mm-hmm. I've read this one already, but... So, if you are one of those people that are like, oh, I'm not really into Krakoa, this whole politics thing, I don't get it. Well, guess what? X-Men number 1 is your superhero comic for mutants, mutant lovers. I can't spoil a thing, but basically it sets up the super team, which we've seen in the preview.
Uh-huh.
There is an insane, cool-looking, designed alien with, like, these, like... It's, like, hard-shelled, but it has, like, tentacles coming out of it that we've seen in the preview. That's just so cool. And it sets up the X-Men in a new location. That's really neat. And I think Pepe Larraz is one of the best... Not maybe he is the best superhero artist right now. He doesn't have that like fine line detail that you have in the 90s, but he has like, I don't know, it's just so clean and so atmospheric. And of course, paired with Marte Gracia's colors.
For sure.
But yeah, I can't wait for people to react to it. I think they're going to love it. What is your most anticipated book of the week?
My most anticipated book of the week is Justice League Infinity number 1 by J.M. DeMatteis. I never know how to say his name. Jim Tucker and Ethan Beavers. This is the follow-up to Justice League Unlimited. Picks up after the show with everyone fighting for the throne of Apocalypse, because spoilers for a 15-year-old episode of television, Darkseid has vanished following his last battle with the Justice League.
Oh my god, I was just getting to that episode.
Sure. And it follows the heroes kind of starting to discover more of the multiverse. There's already been solicits for future issues that involve Overman from Earth X and President Ooh. Superman and all these other multiversal versions of these heroes. But it's just so cool to see the art style and character designs from Justice League kind of reinterpreted for this. And I've been wanting a Justice League continuation for 15 years now, so I'm so happy that this is finally happening. You know, similar to Batman and the Adventures Continue, you know, we get a little bit more of that world and playing with characters that some of whom hadn't been invented by the time the show was coming out. So it's really cool.
Yeah, we're gonna run a interview with J.M. DeMatteis next week sometime, I think.
Nice.
A written one. I'm excited to read this one as well. Give me more Justice League. I want like all varieties.
Yeah, for sure.
Dark. Every flavor. Strawberry. Strawberry Shortcake should be a member of the Justice League. There, I said it. In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our most favorite cover art out next week.
Yeah.
What do you got
for us? I love this cover for The Conjuring, The Lover, number 2 by Ryan Brown. It's modeled after an old horror VHS tape, I'm just kind of a sucker for that kind of iconography. It's got a peeling horror sticker on a Be Kind Rewind sticker. It looks like it's been dog-eared and rented 1,000 times, and in the middle of the page there's a girl with blood coming out of the shower and shadow demon hands all around her. It's just a really, really cool, like, if I saw this as a movie poster, I would want to, if I saw this on the video store shelf, when video stores existed, yeah. I'd definitely pick it up and take a look at the back and see, see who directed it, see what it's about.
I love the beat up nature of it.
Yeah, it's a really cool, really clever take, especially, since, I like the fact that they're owning that this is a media tie-in book, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, they're not trying to, say, well, this is only tangentially related. If you've seen the movie by now, the new one, this book ties in very heavily to the backstory of The Conjuring 3. So I like the further connections to the cinematic universe.
What do you suppose is the deal with the rainbow behind the image? So it's just like the box art or something?
Yeah, I think it's just that old, like, it kind of looks like whenever you'd buy like a blank VHS tape and it would have like some kind of generic rainbow logo on it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they like added things to it or something.
Yeah.
Nice cover, dude.
Thanks, bro.
If you go to amp2comics.com and go to this podcast post, you can see these pictures.
Yeah.
Pictures. Covers in full. I picked Batman number 110, a cover by Jock.
I was so close to picking this one, too, because it's so gorgeous.
It is. The play of light is amazing. So Batman is, his shoulders, his body, his head are very well rendered, mm-hmm. but everything kind of stops below his waist because it blends into the shadow of the bat symbol. His head actually makes the head of the bat symbol, but then below him, it's just streaking out in this incredible
so cool.
Play of light that's intense. It's like almost realistic enough where it could be an actual photograph of Batman from one of the movies. But then you can see like in the points in the top of his bat emblem, you can see like the lines of the art kind of becoming a little less realistic and blending in less with the light, like the rest of him is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Jock has done probably some of the most iconic Batman covers ever in the last like 15 years for sure.
Yeah, he's so good.
Too good. But yeah, no, I might have to pick this one up. You know what I hate about variant covers is like like, I want to own it, but then what am I going to do with it? Put it in my drawer? Right, like, I can't, right. I want to frame it. Like, I, all the art I own, I frame. And so, I guess you could frame comics.
Yeah. I mean, some people frame, you know, vinyl records.
This is true.
I don't.
This is true. I have cowboy hats on my wall right in front of me.
What?
But they're not framed.
The devil, you say.
I got invited to the Westworld party from HBO.
And, oh, hell yeah. Uh-huh.
You do this test to see if you're evil or naughty or nice, basically.
Yeah, you have to arm wrestle Ed Harris.
Yeah, and he breaks one of your fingers if you lose.
Oh, man.
I got a good guy hat. I got the white one.
Nice.
But, my partner got the black hat, and then we had snacks and stuff after we watched the first episode. But everybody kept going up to her and going, "How did you get the black hat? How do you?" And she taught them how to cheat. And I said, "This is so evil of you.
This is very black hat of you
to give them the secret so they can get the." She's the man in black, basically.
Right. Incredible.
In our next
Dave's segment, Cowboy Corner.
Jeff Parker joins us to talk about Ninjak. All of this is Jeff Parker. Jeff, you've got Ninjak coming out July 14th. Thank you so much for being on the APC Comics podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is great.
So Ninjak's been in the works for some time. I think it was announced all the way back in July 2020. Is it odd talking about this book after so long between, like, likely writing the scripts and then, you know, sending it off?
It's actually not, because this is the kind of thing that happens in comics all the time. And I don't mean that we secretly break out a pandemic that derails us for a year. But with comics and probably just every branch of entertainment, you always get started on something way before people are aware of it. Mm-hmm. Something happens, someone goes off to do another project or whatever, and then everything gets put back together, and you end up having to go back reading your old stuff to remember what you were doing and getting back in the headspace. And
sure.
And that's kind of what we did with this. But, you know, obviously we were wondering, like, are we even coming back? Are there still going to be comics? It was a scary year.
It was, yeah.
So, in fact, this same sort of thing happened when I did the James Bond origin series. And then I can't even remember why, but for scheduling or whatever, we got placed further down the line or something. And then I had to come back to it later and I had to reread my old stuff. And I'm like, wow, this guy's great. You know, and,
love his writing.
Get it all back, watch some James Bond movies and get fired up again.
Yeah. The Ninjak's a character that's been, you know, rebooted and retooled like a few times over the years. So tell us a little bit about how you wanted to approach the character.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking in terms of, and I know people are thinking, well, this looks different. You know, you're rebooting. And actually, as far as I'm concerned, it's the same one all the way through. It's just simply like you're getting a different sort of look, because Javier and I are different creators. And you know, and it's like, this is what we're going to focus on. Like, we make little allusions to past stories, but very briefly. So we just didn't want anybody to have to think, oh, I've got to go read 20-some years of Ninjak.
Right.
Figure this out. No, literally, all you need to know is he was a secret agent for MI6. He's kind of like a ninja. And if you've got that, you are fine.
Yeah. No, that's what I've always liked about him, is it's essentially like, what if Bond had swords?
Yeah, it really is. What if Bond used swords? And we switch it up quite a bit. Like a few times we have him shoot guys, and you know, it's like, he's not making a big deal out of it. He's just like, well, this will work better in this
sure.
situation. This doesn't seem very ninja-like, but look how sneakily I did it. I was very quiet when I
shot. Right.
It's because at the beginning of the story, everything about MI6 and British Secret Service gets released to the public. And so suddenly Ninjak is not a secret. Literally the whole planet knows he's Colin King and everything else about. But you have to assume there's so much about the British Secret Service, people are probably pouring through like, what? They were behind this and blah, blah, blah. You know, but certain people who have grudges are like, oh, okay, everybody go kill Colin King, because he assassinated a lot of our people over the years. so he can't catch a break. And there's a Songbird agent named Mina who's been trailing him. MI6 has her following him. So just to kind of keep an eye, because it's like you've got your most dangerous weapon out there, freelancing or doing whatever, and you know they want to keep tabs on him. And at some point she realizes, oh, he's known I've been following him all along. Of course, he doesn't care. He's like, well, whatever. She's about to get killed too, and he kind of steps in and helps. And he's in this unique position because, you know, usually everybody in these stories is also a super killer.
Right.
And she's not. She's just a conventional spy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of, it's almost like a little a tutor situation where he's like, here's how you kill somebody. Here's how you prevent yourself from being killed, that sort of thing. He sort of takes her under his wing. And so you finally get, instead of, I didn't want to do a big internal narrative. I feel like there's just too much of that in comics. And so instead he talks more about how he does things, and you get a little, and you get insight that way, but it's through talking to another character, which to me is a little more dynamic and fun.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. The too many caption box can get the narrative to sort of slow down in its pace. Right.
I feel like it's a crutch. And
interesting, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just insulted half my industry.
Anybody uses too many captions?
Well, I'm better than you. I think a lot of readers of take it like this is serious now. Uh-huh. Look at it's got caption boxes.
Oh, yeah.
It's the either two approach. They either think, yes, this is the way the Dark Knight was. You know, there's captions, or they tune it out altogether and don't read them, so they don't work.
Sure.
So I'm trying to really limit the caption boxes in this, and like let's have people with word balloons talking to each other.
Do you ever have the desire to like stuff a thought balloon in there, even though it's you know not in in the cultural?
You know, comic in certain things I do. I think a lot of times if you simply just did. The funny thing is people accept them. People who get mad about them accept them as long as they're in a square box.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing. There goes my third rib. He's tough. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, how is this different from, you know, Clark Kent thinking, thanks to my X-ray vision, I can tell what they're all wearing.
Right. You know,
with little bubbles going to his head. It's the same thing. It's a fun thing. You know, I remember that the first time I was aware, somebody was actually doing that in movies, was the early 80s Dune.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Remember, because a lot of times they stop and they look and you hear their internal monologue.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you don't see that done in movies a whole lot. At least later, you just see it done slightly different.
Especially in David Lynch movies, where like so much is left to interpretation. You literally have Kyle MacLachlan thinking, "Oh, I wonder if I can do this."
Exactly. And it was so fun, and I was like,
"Bring it back!"
Right.
I mean, I know it's part of the show not tell thing, but it's like, well, if you're going to embrace everything, give us their thoughts.
Sure.
So with extra time due to the pandemic, did you find yourself rewriting any of the scripts or changing any of the words in the captions and word balloons and stuff like that?
Yeah. I, 'cause we had so much time.
Yeah.
Sure.
Went back over. I really spent way more time on these than I normally would. And just kind of fine tuned and poked and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but then you got to be careful. Like you don't drain the energy out of something. Sometimes if something feels too worked over, it loses that little spark. So we definitely, but Lisa Hawkins, our editor, is very good about, she reads it as the reader for everybody. You know, she looks at it. Like, I'm the clean slate who's just coming in reading, and here's what I'm telling you that I'm getting out of it. And that really helps, you know, keep you when you get too into the weeds.
Sure. just like, is this necessary right now?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, can you talk, you touched on this a little bit earlier, but can you talk a little bit about Javier Pulido's work? Was there a specific page in like the first issue that he like exceeded your expectations, something you didn't even think would happen?
It's fun because I always try to guess how he's going to draw something and I'm always wrong. He's always going to come up with something completely different than what I envisioned. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what really stuck with me? Like, there are these three supervillains, essentially, who show up at the end of the story. And longtime comics fans will quickly notice they're probably a bit of a parody of existing characters from another company with mutant powers. But And he drew them differently than I thought he would, and probably good, because in my mind they were going to be way too close to the existing characters. Yeah, I'm trying to think. He'll do weird things with the and I mean a good weird with the story panel progression, where it forces you to stick with it a little harder. But it's kind of, I kind of like it, because sometimes if you spoon feed the reader too much, again, they tune out.
Right.
He makes you work a little bit with him so that you really get into it. I mean, it's not like Acme Novelty Library with Chris Ware or something, though that would be pretty fun to do one time, you know, have the story just go around like a little maze or something.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. But he will take you in directions across the page that you've got to be ready that he's doing it. And it's funny, it occurred to me, if you did make this a digital version, then you probably wouldn't get any of that, you know, if it fed you a panel at a time.
Right.
Oh, yeah. True. Right. Guided view. Yeah. I wonder if they'll do that with Comixology.
I wonder. Oh, wow. Now,
because I think
we Valiant, just considered it here on the show.
Isn't Valiant on, if Valiant is on Comixology, they do have like that grid view no matter what, right?
Yeah,
some intern will try to figure it out. I'm not paid enough for this.
One of my favorite things, like back when we did Batman 66 at DC, and at first we were doing them, they were digital first, so we had to figure out a lot of stuff that, you know, we hadn't done before. And what I really liked was the way as you would progress, the word balloons would appear.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Stuff would pop up into the panels. Yeah,
in order. And
oh man, I remember that. Yeah.
Because I always get mad at, like, I'd see online someone saying something they read in one of my comics. And I'm like, did you even read it? You look at, it's like, oh, you just stood there at the shelf and freeloaded it
in the shop. Right.
And you're blasting through it because you're not really buying all these comics, right. And you missed a point because you're doing that. And but when you read it like that, yeah, and when you read it like that, it, like, you can't skip anything.
Right.
And that was I kind of like that. It's like that made me warm up to digital a lot more.
I remember reading those on digital and like feeling like I was watching the opening title sequence to Batman 66. Like,
yeah, just it pops up the same way.
Yes, exactly. I loved that.
It's comics on rails.
Right. Yeah, it's like you're on the Haunted Mansion ride or something, or and you're being taken through the comic book.
Wait a minute. Why don't we have amusement parks where you read comics on a ride? I want that.
Maybe edit this out and let's save this gem for ourselves.
Yeah, let's Indiegogo this.
Trademark, yeah. Copyright, trademark.
This is good stuff.
Get Burt Ward for the opening ceremony.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, in your opinion, when it comes to Ninjak, how is this character different from other rich, tactful superheroes?
He's reluctantly heroic. He ends up doing a lot of good things, but he's very mercenary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, he always tries to make sure somebody's paying for the whole thing, and I kind of appreciate that because, like, so do I. So I'm not doing this with my money. surely one of these governments can fund me to help save the world or something. And of course that's not necessarily because he needs the money or anything. It's kind of a sort of thing that where you, in my mind, this is mm-hmm. my take. I don't know how other writers are approaching it, but mm-hmm. it's like the way if you try to list something for free on Craigslist, nobody comes to pick it up. But if you charge $20 for it, then they're all kind of, is it still there? You know, right. It's like, if you don't present your services as extremely valuable, people won't treat them that way.
Oh, I love that.
Right. Yeah,
that's a good point.
In my mind, that's what he's doing. You know, it's the mercenary thing is like, he's always kind of building his rep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't ever see him brag about it. Actually, in our story later, he does.
nice. Spoilers. I'm
gonna spoil that one. But I like thinking like, it's like, no, part of this is still the salesmanship. You're putting yourself out there as the best in the world. And somebody's got to toot your horn.
Yeah, for sure. We've actually talked to a decent number of Valiant creators recently. They've been putting out a ton of great books. Yeah. And we were wondering, like, in your opinion, how does Valiant, like, differ from other publishers?
So far, well, I've only worked on this with them. Mm-hmm. So far, gosh, they've been, well,
or I guess what would be the draw to working with them for you?
Since this is a weird time.
Yeah.
I can't tell, like, it's like, are they always like this? Or is it because at the moment they're only putting out a couple of things, so we're mm-hmm. getting a ton of attention. Sure. But I'm like, well, we sure are getting a lot of attention from everybody at the company. And
yeah.
And they're really all over the marketing and everything, which is great because, you know, a lot of times you work on stuff and you think you are going to try to sell this, right? You know,
right.
It's like, do I have to take time out to go try to sell this?
Sure.
When you have people. And right now, Valiant seems to be all over it, which is great. And they seem... From what I can tell, they're being very thoughtful about right now about how their universe comes together. I feel like they have probably grown through some stuff, and now they're sort of getting that inter-book relationship thing down. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've always done that, but I feel like some things are really clicking for them, and they want to make sure they're doing it right. You know, again, going back to Bond, it's like handling the Bond franchise. You know, you've been entrusted with this thing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And, you know, everybody's counting on you not to screw it up and to keep it going, even though the next version of it's probably going to be still different yet.
Mm.
The juggling act.
And I'm sure they're aware of that. So, it's like it's been a good experience for me.
Awesome.
That's great.
I hope they've enjoyed working with me and Javier. I think he and I can be kind of difficult. And and so I would just like to thank them for tolerating us. you know, it's something with the JP initials that just make us problematic. But
oh, my God. I didn't even realize that the JP bros.
Yeah, we are the JP bros. Actually,
when are you guys going to do a Jurassic Park book together?
His real last name is... not ending in P. That's like his work name. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is his name. It's just part of his name. Everyone in Europe has a much longer 6-part name.
Right.
And there's just no room in comics for all those names. That's why, they, and a lot of Canadian artists always say, I am Mobius or what, you know,
sure.
they pick one word and that's now who they are.
I like to think maybe Mobius did come up with their name like that. Okay, Mobius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a whim.
Like, leaning back like, Jean Giraud, no, that's two words. I can't have two words. Mobius.
Mobius, yeah.
Which works great because... And then it's kind of weird when they use it on that Marvel TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
sure.
I know they spell it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And with I'm sure they're thinking, well, it's like a Mobius strip because we're dealing with time, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But still, it's like you're using an artist's name, like a really
thinking too. Yeah,
yeah, one of the most iconic
famous artists.
It's like calling him Kirby and not expecting people to make a connection to Jack Kirby.
Sure.
Yes.
Well, since Ninjak is a super spy, we have to ask: do you have any spy movies or books you look for inspiration when you approach Ninjak, but also just in general to get into the headspace of writing Ninjak?
One I always tell everybody that I go back to, and I did this a lot back with my graphic novel, The Interman, which was kind of like, well, this is my first graphic novel, and it's 3 Days of the Condor.
Oh, and sure.
Specifically the movie, because the book is actually not that good. And that's a weird thing to say, because
yeah,
it's almost always the other way around.
Right? I've never read the book, actually.
Well, the book, it was called 6 Days of the Condor. Okay. And the writer actually worked with military, with intelligence. So he had a lot of good data in there. It was a lot of really good stuff, but he was not a good writer. So he had some annoying things throughout, but that's okay, because then when Sidney Pollack and the screenwriters did the movie, you know, they cleaned all that up and they put what was good about it on the screen. And to me, it's all about Max von Sydow is in the movie, and he plays Joubert, the super killer. And that character just looms so large in my head over all of these kind of things. Whenever there's spy stuff, I always think of Max von Sydow, because he's so convincing as this worldly man who knows all about the black ops of the world and stuff. Like, he gives Robert Redford this little speech about when they're coming to kill you, here's how it's going to go down.
Yes, yeah.
And then it happens at the end, and Redford, since he listened to Max von Sydow, bolts, you know.
Right.
That's one I always highly recommend. And I'm pretty sure it's on one of the streaming services.
I think it's on Amazon right now.
Yeah. Watch that. It's a great movie.
It really is. That was a funny connection. It was written by Lorenzo Semple, who wrote Batman 66.
Yeah, we always come back around. Lorenzo Semple. I wish I could have met that guy, because so much of the stuff I've worked on, like Flash Gordon and everything.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There's always a connection to him.
Yeah. He wrote a Bond movie. He wrote Never Say Never Again.
Yes, which is a bit strange.
It's very weird. it's a bootleg Bond movie starring Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Was that when he was trying to make his comeback? Sort of.
It was when they were basically, if I remember correctly, Kevin McCrory had the rights to Thunderball.
Right.
And then they just did a remake of Thunderball set in the 80s. Starring Connery as like a semi-retired Bond, and it came out the same year as Octopussy. Like, it was like this company was trying to basically compete with an official Bond movie.
Crazy.
So strange.
Yeah, that good job, by the way, summarizing that weird bit of Bond history.
That's for some reason Bond occupies like 30% of my brain at all times.
Yeah, when you get somebody and they know the ins and outs of the here's the deal with Casino Royale and why
for sure.
Yeah. You know, okay, this is one of those guys.
Right. Yeah. No, I was on a different podcast recently talking about Casino Royale and was telling them about how it was released under a different title in the U.S. originally. The novel was. And they were just like, why do you know that? How do you retain this? And I was like, I don't know. I don't remember anything important, but you asked me something about James.
It's important
Bond,
to you.
I got you. Right.
Yeah. Here in the end times, as we're fighting our way across the burning oceans, we'll turn to you. What do you got? And you're like, well, Bond actually used a Beretta in the book, but they changed it to a Walther PPK.
Because Ian Fleming got enough letters about it.
Just thought it looked sissy, and they made fun of Ian Fleming, and then he changed it in the books too.
So funny. Yeah. No, I'm just like, well, I don't know.
Thanks,
man. In The Spy Who Loved Me, the submarine did this. Yeah. No, I. So I got to ask, since we're talking Bond, we both really enjoyed James Bond Origin, and we had Ibrahim Mustafa on the show recently. We talked to him about Bond. Yeah, he's great. And we asked him this question. I got to ask, who is the definitive on-screen Bond?
Well, okay, it's the same answer. One, I know what Ibrahim said.
Sure.
I'm going to say the same thing, Timothy Dalton.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
Because he and I love Timothy Dalton.
My favorite, too. Absolutely.
And I don't know that he's the definitive on screen, but he was, to me, it was like, oh, yeah, you were born to play James Bond.
He's so good. Yeah.
And the great thing about Dalton, though, is it's like then, of course, you watch him in something where he's completely against that character. And he's great at that, too.
Mm. Yeah, he's always good.
He was a great Prince Baron. He was, you know,
he's great on Doom Patrol right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, you know, I revere Connery like anybody because that was sure. the first Bond I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
I love Daniel Craig, even though Spectre was terrible.
Yep.
It's not his fault.
No, right.
But Casino Royale was, you know, it just rocketed up to one of the top Bond movies of all time and won't ever come down. But Dalton really did. He was the whole package about, like, you could see, as the way I used to describe it is, it's, you know, like, okay, blah, blah, they're all suave and they have to be romantic and everything, of course.
Sure.
But then when you look for intimidation, like if Pierce Brosnan came running at me, I'd pretty much stand my ground. Like, you know, I'd be
well
like,
said.
Oh. Yeah, I'm like, all right, bring it on, Brosnan, you know, or whatever. If Dalton came at me, I'd think twice.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, him or Daniel Craig, I think, oh, no, I'm going to get hurt, probably. Well,
they both have those, like, wolf eyes, almost. You know what I mean? Like, yes. they look like killers.
Cool. A weird thing that'll only matter to the three people listening to this who actually did the Interman, which I referred to earlier. The reason I called the main character Van Meech was because of Timothy Dalton. There was a, at some point in the 90s, I was watching some nature thing Dalton was hosting, and Dalton actually went out, I believe they're just somewhere in the very northern parts of Alaska. Maybe they're just way up in the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're observing wolves. And
oh, wow.
And the guy that they're with, his last name was Meech. He was the expert. And and every time, I just loved the way Dalton kept saying, Meech knows this land like no one else. and I just thought it was cool, even though it was a short, choppy name.
Yeah.
Sure. It's because of Meech. that I used it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and it's like,
I gotta find this.
Everything comes back to Timothy Dalton at some point. Yeah, I think Ibrahim almost named a dog after him, but then his wife nixed it because she didn't want to be yelling, come here, Timothy Dalton, at the dog park.
Not so easy to say.
That's what's great about it, though. Just imagine calling Timothy Dalton.
Dalton, come here.
I wish he had done that. I hope he eventually gets it.
It's smart to name your dog after a celebrity, too, because if you're ever walking the dog and call their name, if they're nearby, you might actually get to meet the celebrity.
Yeah.
Because you're calling a
name. Unless you picked like Billy Zane or something, and then you're like, Billy Zane. And then it's like, now I got to somehow carry on a conversation with Billy Zane.
I love Demon Knight.
The Phantom had its moments. Come on, guys.
But I don't know why I just roasted Billy Zane, because I've actually enjoyed him in most things.
Sadly, Jeff, he's one of our biggest fans. He's probably going to write you a letter.
I'd be afraid of Billy Zane too if he were
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
He got totally muscled up to play the Phantom. He did a real good job.
And he was great as the dweeb on Titanic, right? Or dweeb, I don't know if dweeb is the right word.
He's the husband.
He's a cad.
The crazy thing about, I read this thing about the Phantom where they had made him one of those like 90s muscle suits, like the 90s Flash cartoon TV series,
right? Mm-hmm.
And he had gotten so ripped that they had to replace it with just a regular like spandex bodysuit.
That's great.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, he just totally got worked out, and it's like it always makes a difference. Like a weird thing, and I'm looking on Twitter one day, and then this ad pops up where it's Bob Odenkirk talking about his workout for
Wild for Nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I could not have, back when I was watching Mr. Show, I could not imagine this future.
Yeah. Right.
Where I would one day be looking at the Odenkirk workout for some John Wick like movie.
Right. And he trained for like 2 years for that. Yeah. That's crazy.
It is crazy. And
so he takes you through. I watched the video. I thought, I got to see this video. Yeah. It's like, you know, I'm like Odenkirk age almost. I like,
yeah.
See how to stay in shape. And I was like, well, that was a pretty tough little workout he was doing. And
yeah.
But it does make the difference. Like when you look at a actor who clearly does nothing, and they're expecting you to buy that they're punching out these other characters.
Sure.
You know, even with your suspension of disbelief, you don't buy it. But if they do put in the effort, like most actors do now, you know, like in the old days, a lot of them were dancers and stuff, which you got to be really strong to do.
Oh yeah.
And these guys, yeah, this thing like Daniel Craig, he's clearly a strong guy. And it's mm-hmm. like, so you imagine if he, even when he's doing a fake swing at somebody like that, well, that would have hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, true. it helps sell it.
And now you're thinking, wow, Bob Odenkirk could totally kick the shit out of David Cross.
Yeah, where's David Cross's John Wick?
He better be in the sequel. That would be amazing if he got ripped too.
What if they had David Cross come in as the final killer or whatever in that movie?
Man, incredible.
That would be...
Just flanked by Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I mean, it's already incredible with Doc, you know?
Yeah, and get Brian Posehn and all the other Mr. Show regulars in there.
Paul F. Tompkins, yeah.
We might be the three only people who are listening to this right now that know Mr. Show. I was a big fan of that. I had the box set. Mr. Show.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. Shifting well, gears.
Tompkins, when Tompkins turned up in towards the end of a show I really like called Lodge 49.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a little part, but it was so perfect for him. And it's like, this is great.
He's so good. He's always a delight.
He is.
Talk about good. Nathan and I both reviewed, I've reviewed Feature Quest. Nathan reviewed Batman 66 for AFPT. We both are huge fans of those. We had to ask, do you have any desire to return to those series? Is there any chance you may return to those series?
Not that I've heard of, because, and I could have this wrong, so don't come after me, Warner, but I think they decided when they kind of wrapped up doing those books, that it's like, all right, we're going to start keeping these divisions separate again.
Oh.
Like for a while, they were opening up Hanna-Barbera and letting DC get a hold of it. Mm-hmm. And it might have been that DC was like going a little hog wild with like some of the interpretations,
sure.
which I think resulted in some really interesting stuff.
Like, yeah, Elmer Fudd Batman story, for instance, right?
Yeah, or my favorite thing was Russell and Pooh on the Flintstones.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. So good. Oh,
if you had told me like you're gonna love a Flintstones comic, I'm like, you go to hell. I am not.
The Snagglepuss Chronicles were so good.
Yes,
so good.
And, the first thing I reviewed for AIPT was Nightwing and Megilla Gorilla. That was like the first thing I reviewed.
Is that a fact? I didn't know that.
That's like legit. You sent me the list of like, here's what's coming out this week. And I was like, I gotta see what this is about. Megilla Gorilla has been accused of murder.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a couple of the shorts. I did a Captain Caveman and a Funky Phantom in addition.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And they did that. And that was when I finally did my Twitter settings to switch it to do not see people who do not follow you. Because I had about had it with gun nuts at that point.
Sure.
So I made my Funky Phantom story was all about they get, you know, and they encouraged you to use DC characters in the thing. So I used Jason mm-hmm. Blood.
Right.
Because I freaking love Etrigan. I mean, it's one of my favorite creations.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him summon the Funky Phantom. And it was for a bunch of NRA types who wanted to get one of the framers of the Constitution to explain what the Second Amendment was all about. And as the Funky Phantom explains when he gets there, he goes, I died before this was written. Yeah. So he sits down, makes everybody suffer through as he reads the entire thing. And I originally had a much more violent scene where they all accidentally shoot each other and they all end up as ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And DC came back and like, well, we can't do that. And so I changed it. Instead, it's like it was like a bunch of near misses and they were all scared. And they all end up at the end using muskets and balls. It's like that's the right. compromise that they take away from the Funky Phantom is yeah. that like, okay, you have
this
to
is what the law's
yourself.
About.
And boy, I had so many gun guys just screaming about me like, look, it's sure. another Portland liberal. And I'm like, one, I'm from North Carolina. I am literally, yeah. I actually do own guns. I just don't sit there and think
about them all day.
Wonder. No, I keep them locked up like you're supposed to. And
sure.
I never think about them. And it's like, you know, it's like these guys are just like, you guys are sitting there constantly putting them in your profile. And it's like, it's gross. Right. Anyway, so they're acting like I didn't know what I was talking about. And Batman, and I was like, oh, so this is what it's like for everybody else on the internet who's constantly mm-hmm. getting harassed.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, screw that. Where's that setting? And I, boop, there. Now I don't see it anymore.
Right. Yeah. Smart.
That's great.
I encourage everybody to use that setting on there.
It changes the game for sure.
Yeah, oh, it's huge. Of course, you know, there might be something you needed to know about that you won't find out because of it, but
You'll get there eventually.
Yeah, somebody will tell you.
Well, do you have anything that's in the works right now that you're excited about?
I do, but they're all like at the little secret stage.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry to do that to you.
No, you're fine.
No, that's fine.
I'm sorrier to do it to me. Because I love, like, I just want to go ahead and talk about things and get uh-huh. them going out in the world. But
right.
Yeah, they're all at the not quite ready to be discussed yet stage.
Okay.
Let's see. Is there, the one thing coming up pretty soon, though, that was announced, the Aquaman anniversary issue is coming up. And I'm finally teaming back up with Doc Shaner.
Nice.
Because he always wanted to do an Aquaman story in there when I was working on it. And mm-hmm. so when they asked me to do one, I was like, can I get Shaner? And they're like, you know, he's working on Strange Adventures and everything. Like, yeah, but come on, we got time on this. And so, yeah, he and I are working together. I always love working with him. That guy's sure. just the best.
Yeah, his style's so good, especially in Strange Adventures right now. Good Lord.
The thing, he's another one. You wouldn't make a connection to Javier Pulido with him, but he's also another one who comes up with interesting stuff that you're not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just about how well he draws. It's like, yes, he draws great, but look at how heavy-hitting the industry is now with artists. They all draw great.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It seems like, I feel for anybody wanting to jump into comics right now and starting out. Like, well, good luck. Everybody is a badass at art.
Sure.
I was. Isn't Jorge Jimenez like only like 31 or something? Like, and his art is yeah. I'm 37 and I'm not even good at anything I do.
Well, you're great
Everybody's young. Everybody's amazing. Everybody knows how to color already. Yeah, it's just crazy.
I always say, I always say on the show, actually, over and over, like, could you imagine if you showed Jack Kirby when he was in his prime, like, computers and some of the art that's coming out today, and then actually giving him a computer and seeing what he could do with it?
I guarantee you he'd figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Like, because the mixed media stuff he was doing on, like, Fantastic Four and stuff was, like, crazy.
Yeah, it was nothing to him. He just immediately, like, oh, what if I tape a bunch of stuff to this thing and take a picture of it?
You know, right, right.
So he was always, well, that's the great thing about Kirby people don't think about until you just said it. Mm-hmm. He was always experimenting. He was always trying new stuff. He was not locked into the past at all.
Right.
I guarantee you if someone sat down and said, well, here's Clip Studio or what used to be Manga Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Yeah, it'd throw him for a day or two, but then by the end of the week, he'd already have turned out a comic book on it.
Right. Wow, he's using motion blur already.
Yeah, he'd be up to be doing 5 comics a month.
Oh, you're right, actually. He'd probably move faster even.
Yeah, he'd go be just blast through it, and it's like, it'd be wild. But then, of course, collectors would be insanely mad because there wouldn't be a bunch of originals.
Oh, true, yeah.
Right, for sure.
The reseller it's like, market,
Kirby didn't get those back anyway, so.
Yep.
Yeah. A little sting at comics history there.
Since we're back on comics and not talking about James Bond movies anymore.
sorry.
Jeff, what comics are you reading right now?
Oh, let's see. What have I been? Have you seen Earth Boy by Paul Tobin and Ron Chan?
I have not. No.
From Dark Horse. It's check that out. It's okay. Really cool. I think Tobin's one of the most prolific guys in comics. In any industry he works in, the guy he's just an idea machine. It's ridiculous, and that kind of pisses me off. and Ron Chan is really hitting a stride as an artist. I mean, he does just such cool stuff. That's
so good.
All of his work, and follow him on Twitter because He drops tips and will give away like Photoshop brushes that he made and stuff like that all the time. Like, he's extremely helpful to starting out artists. So yeah, that's one that's jumping to mind right away.
Nice. Awesome.
I'm trying to think what else is that. It's weird because people show me art and then I'll think, oh yeah, check this out. And then later I realize, well, that book's not even on the stands yet. So,
oh, sure.
Like, no one knows what the hell I'm talking about. I'm trying to think what is actually on the stands right now. Well, whatever it is, it's probably good stuff.
I'm so glad
everybody can go back in comic shops again.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like every week there's like 150 books now, right? And like half of them are insanely good.
Yeah. It's, I do wish everything would. Not to get into the controversial thing, but I still wish monthlies would go to digital. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, so everybody can afford to read them, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
Get them nice and cheap, or get them like packaged like a cable channel or something, so you get a bunch, and then sell the compilations as books, because I still think people would buy them.
Oh, for sure. In the main show of this episode, I was telling Dave about how whenever I lost my house in a hurricane a few years ago. And
oh, my God.
Oh, sorry, that's okay. The sorry. I didn't mean to just drop the mood, but do what?
It's in Ocala. We're like, where is the house now?
Oh, yeah. Right.
It's in the Gulf burning. It's in the fire.
Somebody grabbed my house.
Godzilla-like flame ball.
Right. It's actually being used as kindling. The comic shops were closed for months, and that was how I was getting – that's how I was catching up on everything, was reading it digitally. And then whenever I was able to again, I went and bought all the singles because I like having them. And mm-hmm. so I think it's really great for people to have those options.
Yeah.
We were also –
I think everybody still wants you to see the books they have on the shelves.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
We were so to me, I remember just saying this just years ago, like, well, it'll probably end up being that monthlies will be digital mm-hmm. and then you'll get your trades and volumes like that as solid books or whatever. And it still hasn't really happened yet. And I'm right. kind of surprised.
At the beginning of the show, we were talking about sales, actually, and graphic novels make up $830 million of sales versus $280 million of comic book sales. So it's already going in that direction, although digital comics are only 160 million for 2020.
Well, if you ever can find out, because no one will ever tell you how much they sell digital. Sure.
That's true.
It's the Bitcoin of the comics business. It's like, well, how much is it worth? Well, blah, 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 trail off, walk down the hall, and no one ever really tells you.
I wonder too, like, digital comics are the same price as the physical books, which doesn't seem
fair.
Right.
Digital comics should just be a dollar.
Right. I think they're like worried that it will hurt the comic shop market, right? Because if you can get your books digitally.
I know that, and I know brick and mortar retailers often are worried about that, but I don't think so. It's like I think people would see the shops as, okay, now what you're going to is a boutique store.
Right.
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 And you're going to find the really quality stuff and with knowledgeable people who know what they're talking about. And and if they're a really good store, they'll have a kids section where the kids can go hang out. And
yeah, for sure. Stuff.
And they also sell candy for whatever that's worth, you know. And that's my ideal of it, that you know, you lure in people with the digital and they end up at the comic shop and like going, oh, this is awesome. Because you can't, there's still just not enough comic shops.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Just like, I mean, okay, there's way more bookstores, but what do you have the most of, and at least in our country, is libraries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I often encourage people, it's like, well, just check something out from the library, because one, the library, after you ruin the copy, will buy another one. It's a, you know, so it's constant sales. The librarians are great. The librarians want things that get people in libraries, and comics do a great job of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And, yeah, and when you go on their digital services, you know, like, well, the show thing is Hoopla. I can't remember if I don't think that's the one you get comics through. I don't remember. This is great. I'm just really baiting a bunch of librarians.
You're also telling our audience to go to the library and destroy the comics.
Yeah, go to the library, destroy the comics, so they have to order another one. Do it very often, please, so they order a lot.
Oh, is that the... did you hear that? That's the music playing you off the stage. Sorry.
Yeah, that's... this is why no one lets me on their show, guys. I tried to warn you.
Well, since we're at the end of the show, let's get to our last segment, Off Topic Top Shelf. We want to know, Jeff Parker, what are you into right now that's not comics related?
What am I into that is not comics related? Like media stuff, or is anything in the world?
Anything.
Yeah, anything.
Gardening,
could be. Yep.
Craft beers.
Netflix.
Oh, I love craft beers.
Yeah.
That's a great thing to fill up. The, there's this on Twitter, which, by the way, I'm Jeff Parker on there. Extremely easy to find me. There's this one. We accidentally started a beer thread like a few years ago. I think it was initially like me and Sandy Gerald talking to Ben Abernathy from DC Comics. He's a Batman editor. And but he's also a extremely accomplished beer guy. Like, he knows his stuff. He can sit there and lecture. He can lecture you either about Batman or beer, and knows equally as much about both. But and then people started like jumping in. Well, I just had this, and the thing just grew out of control, and people keep responding to it. So once you accidentally get in the thread, you never get out. So think twice before you enter that thread. The beer thread, but we're constantly putting up pictures, like Brett Schoonover is in there. You know, everybody's just putting up pictures of the beer they get. Craig Russo. Nice. I'm trying to, like, there's a billion people in that thread. I can't. And so it's kind of made the whole thing, even with just Sandy, who I've worked with a lot. You know, we'll go back, we'll send each other pictures of like, hey, I just tried this. This was good. And there's no way I'm going to remember the like 600 beers Sandy sent me. But I do like, I like IPAs. I know it's a huge cliche to be someone living in the Northwest.
Like, sure, sure.
Well, like IPAs and salmon.
Yeah.
But sorry, I am. And, you know,
I like what you like.
Good Lord, this chain is insanely long.
It
I'll link to it in the article for this podcast post so people can find it.
Oh, now it's going to get even
more unwieldy.
This is the one that started with Ben Abernathy, right?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He posted a Dragoon Brewing Company IPA.
And it's like everybody. Well, it's interesting because now you find so many interesting little regional beer makers.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. It really blew up in the last like 10 years.
Yeah, parts of the country you wouldn't expect to have good beer, like Utah. like, what the hell is, but oh, you know, yeah. they've got Uinta and it's like, oh, okay, this is great.
Nice.
Like, why?
Do you have a go-to beer?
I tend to like anything from, for some reason here in Oregon, the breweries in Astoria, Oregon are great. Like anything Fort George makes, it's always good. Okay. Let's see. Who are some others? Rogue's really good, but, where are some of the other, cause I don't want to recommend one and then people spit it out Danny Thomas style and go, Parker lied to me.
Yeah. I had this Fields of Green from Fort George. It's really good.
Everything they put in there, and they'll do cool cans. Like they have a limited one called Fanzine out right now that has a comic on it.
Oh, cool.
And another, a local brewery, Ex Novo, gets a lot of art from Jonathan Case, who I've worked with a lot.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yeah.
And, his art is just so beautiful.
Yeah.
He did a book a few years ago, called The New Deal. And if you haven't seen it, try to track it down. It's just a gorgeous book.
Awesome.
And yeah. And he's got a new book coming out. I'm forgetting when it is. Sorry, Jonathan. But, even though I prefer he work with me, it's when he writes and draws his own stuff, it's always terrific.
Oh, for sure.
I like to go to the beer store now just to like look at all the art. It's insane. Like it's like going to a gallery even. Like
yeah,
it's so creative.
To go in and okay, there were gonna be like two doors of the walk-in cooler with beer, the same stuff you always saw growing up. And now it's this massive aisle. And comics artists like Kari Randolph are drawing art on the things and stuff like that. And you're like, what? Like, I know this person. And if I see somebody whose art I know, I'm almost certainly going to buy a six pack of it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I like this guy's comics. Maybe the beer he draws for is good.
Does Craig Russo live in Massachusetts by chance?
Do you know? Yes, he does.
Okay. Yeah. Because I'm looking at his pictures and I'm like, okay, I've had all of these, and I'm in Boston.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, Craig. He is a New Englander, and it's like, ask him anytime. He knows all the good stuff around there.
Nice.
Well, Jeff Parker, thank you so much for being on the AMPT Comics podcast. Ninjak comes out July 14th. Check that out.
That's
goodie.
Really soon.
It is. Yeah. It's very soon, yeah.
Yeah, happy 4th of July, everybody, which I guess is because isn't this airing tomorrow?
It is.
Yeah.
I feel like I should end on a Bill Pullman like
Independence Day style.
Tomorrow is art. We've set the ocean on fire and got record heat in the place where Parker lives. And but by all means, shoot off a bunch of fireworks and set more things on fire. It's our Independence Day.
It's all right.
Only way to celebrate is blow things up in America.
It's pretty cool. That's who we are, I guess. That's
it's pretty cool to get a shout out from President Pullman in his speech.
I know, amazing.
I love that guy. One of my favorite movies he was in was Zero Effect, where he's sent Sherlock Holmes for the movie.
Oh yeah,
I think it was written by Jake Kasdan, who was Lawrence Kasdan's son. It was like one of his early projects. So good.
Wow.
Oh my God. Ben Stiller was in that. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Ben Stiller is the Holmes, the Watson. I'm sorry.
I have to check that out. I have a vague memory of seeing this.
It's got a lot of great music in it too. Yeah. Totally watch that.
Did you guys see Bill Pullman reprised his role from Independence Day for Budweiser this week?
For a Budweiser commercial.
Because you brought up beer and then we talked about the 4th of July, only Bill Pullman can come up next. Yeah, that was an interesting choice, but yet everybody understood what he was doing. And
yep, it's so iconic.
It's like, yeah, we defeated aliens. No, we didn't.
We got to take our wins,
we're
Jeff.
We're all waiting on some reports.
Right.
we didn't even defeat the virus yet, really.
That's true. We're still waiting on that.
But whatever, go out and grill. And hey, yeah, thanks so much for this is a fun conversation.